Thank you, Stephen. So I'm Greg Reitz. I work as a research associate in the South Dakota State University Department of Agronomy, Plant Science, and Horticulture. And today I'm going to talk about precision management and how it could lead to successful cover crop establishment when interseeded into soybeans. So cover crop interseeding with a precision ag twist, I guess you could say. So really the challenge of putting a cover crop into a corn-soybean system in South Dakota, if you have wheat in your rotation, it works much better. As you can see with the wheat harvest there, if you can get a cover crop seeded by about the 1st of August, you have close to 2 months where your average daily high temperature is over 20 degrees Celsius. So that really helps a cover crop get going. But if you wait till after corn-soybean harvest, other people like in Minnesota have mentioned the same fact earlier today, but you're getting that cover crop in 1st of October, for example. You can see that second green bar below. Got a little ahead of myself there. But you can see you have very little time. That temperature really starts dropping off quick. So it's a challenge. You got a small window there in October and possibly, right before planting of the corn and soybean next crop. So squeezing that in. One approach to maybe getting this to work is to broadcast seed on the soil surface, usually with an airplane. So that can be done late August or early September, just prior to senescence. And as we've talked about earlier today, other people have talked about, I should say, that's fairly inconsistent because you really need the soil or the moisture, the rain, to get that to work. It is a quick process, on the other hand, though, because you're doing it aerially, but more seed can get wasted, which is a bad thing if you're dealing with expensive seed species. And it's difficult to target smaller areas as well. So another approach, is the interseeding method, where you have specialized equipment to actually put a row or one or two or two or three between each set of corn or soybean rows. So you can possibly use lower seeding rates with that method. You're getting the seed right into soil, and if you're fortunate enough, soil moisture, and you can target smaller areas of the field as well. It is a slow process. I'd imagine, depending on how size of your equipment, you could be looking at a day to do a whole field this way. Another disadvantage of interseeding is you're going to have yield losses from tires running over crops, especially in your end rows. So here's our cover crop interseeder. Ours is, we can do two rows between each set of corn or soybean rows. Those are 30-inch or 0.76 meters, whatever you want to use. So we can put five row spacings at one time. And had a little video clip. How do you play that here, Stephen? Just to me seed. And if not, I won't play it.
Let's see. Maybe just click on it?
Yeah, I just, oh shucks. That didn't do it. Oh, there we go. Perfect. Here, this is me on August 25th. I'm kind of driving and shooting some video out my back window and got about a 5-second clip before I started running over too many beans, but didn't really need to make enemies with the farmer there. So the mix we used going back to 2015, the mix we used was an annual ryegrass at 30%. That was the majority of it. We also had three different brassicas. So, we had dwarf Essex rapeseed at 10%, turnip at 20%, forage radish at 20%, and there's a legume in that mix as well, crimson clover. And this was a commercially available mix that was, their most popular seller. So I figured, we'll give that a whirl since it's the most popular one. So I actually put a single row in 2015 because our second row wasn't done yet on the seeder, so that's what we had. I did 6.2 kilograms per hectare. That was the lowest seeding rate I could come up with, going at 4 to 4.5 miles an hour. So, and that actually ended up being only 36%, I believe, of our broadcast rate. Our broadcast rate was 16.8 kilograms per hectare, and that 16.8 was basically off the product literature. They recommended doing that as a broadcast. So in these strips that I interseeded that go all the way across the farmer's field, I also did some hand broadcasting on 3x3 meter squares adjacent to each strip, trying to target three different landscape positions on the same date as that I did the drilling. So we had the foot slope. But this particular site here by Bristol, we had a foot slope I targeted where the beans were shorter due to excess moisture. Back slope where they are full canopy on seeding date, and summit on the top. It's a little far away, but you can see that the canopy is still partially open on the summit as well. So here's our on-farm trial locations. We had Volga, which was right outside our back door on the SDSU campus. Then we went further to the north and west up to Bristol for our other site. And just a little snapshot of these fields. The Volga field, you know, I'd classify that as gently rolling. It had tile drainage in it. So really with the Volga field, you were pretty hard-pressed to find areas in the foot slope looking like that. Since it had good drainage, the soybeans were actually quite tall and full canopy for the most part in the foot slope area at Volga. But Bristol, on the other hand, off to the right, and when I'm talking in this talk today, if you kind of forget which site's which, just think B for Bristol, big hill, bad drainage, so just kind of think B, okay? So the Volga soybean, I'm going to start with a yield map here from the combine, the yield monitor data off the combine. So here's our soybean yield and cover crop growth. You can see the strips of cover crops there, the four strips I put in the field at Volga. Anywhere there's white in the strip, there's little or no growth. So about a year ago, I went through these fields, just a handheld GPS, and marked air. I just made three different classifications to keep it simple. So I also did sampling as well, but I couldn't sample like every 100 feet or whatever, those whole strips, just didn't have the time. So I even classified it as a good mixture. I mean, there's both grass and broadleaf cover crops in there, and it looked good. Either a fair mixture or a fair grass. So you can see at Volga, the field with pretty good tile drainage to it, there was only a few little patches where I classified things as having a good mixture. So and there's one of those. You can see what a good mixture looks like. And then coming up slope where we were getting, you know, more shade and probably less soil moisture, that's what I called fair grass. And here is a what I call the fair mix, to just kind of give you a picture of what, you know, my eyes were seeing that day. So the other site at Bristol, completely different ballgame. You can see that we had long, big stretches of blue there. So that, yeah, that really, the cover crop really worked well up there. So, and you can see it's in that those low-lying areas that I showed on that picture before, where the soybeans were really short due to excessive soil moisture early in the growing season. And you can see there's some little, I did have some sampling areas where I sampled. It's maybe a little hard to see, but not that important for now. So here's what I, you know, here's a picture of a good mix at Bristol and a fair mix. Looks pretty similar to the Volga pictures, I'd say. So only problem with Bristol, that cover crop had so much fun in 2015, it wanted to do it again in 2016. So we had annual ryegrass really came, and a few of those yellow flower dwarf essexes came back in full force. And this was no-till, so they didn't get fall tillage. So so proceed with caution if you're going to use those species. The farmer went back in with soybeans into that same field this year. So it'll be interesting to look at the yield results for see if that impacted our yields any this year. And now I'm going to actually talk about some numbers and not just pictures and stuff like that. So you can see we looked at landscape, method, and an interaction between the two. I did a mixed model procedure and SAS for this. So I didn't put the sites together, I guess. Maybe eventually I will. But anyway, at Bristol on the bottom, landscape played a much bigger effect. We had significant effects there for, what, three of the parameters there. And you'd expect that, since at Bristol, remember, the big hills and poor drainage in the low spots, you'd expect landscape to have a significant effect there. At Volga, landscape didn't have too much effect at all. It was more about the method that we used, whether it be drilling or broadcasting. So talking first about landscape effects, Bristol, foot slope. We had more than double, getting pretty close to triple the amount of biomass produced in that foot slope with the short beans and good soil moisture conditions down there. So significantly more biomass. And you can see that annual ryegrass, the green component of the bar, was what that was the driver in that cover crop growth there. So good stuff down the foot slope at Bristol. Unfortunately, the crimson clover there was kind of hiding out at the top. You can maybe see a little sliver up there. I kind of had been ignoring that till about a week or so ago, but I wish I wouldn't have, because look at that. The back slope at Bristol, just the opposite, you know, where the total biomass really took off in the low spot, up higher on the back slope, the crimson clover, that was the big player up there. So, or it did better, I should say. It wasn't the big player. That was, yeah. So, then on the foot slope. So, and the same held true for our Volga site. Up higher elevations, the crimson clover did much better than the lower elevations. And maybe it was just a competition thing that it just didn't do as well when it had all that ryegrass growth it was competing with in the foot slope. So it'd be interesting to just look at crimson clover maybe solo or something like that in future years. So seeding effect, seeding method effects, that was more of a Volga thing. Remember, didn't see a whole lot going on at Bristol for our seeding method. And boy, was it ever, because you can see the D for drilled and B for broadcast. Lots of crimson clover, almost four times as much with drilled, more than double with annual ryegrass, and total biomass, about triple the biomass with drilling at Volga. The only thing at Bristol that where there's a seeding method effect was with dwarf Essex, and that actually was just the opposite. The broadcast did quite a bit better up at Bristol with the dwarf Essex. So effects on soybean yields. Here's the yield difference map, and it shows the three of the four strips anyway at Volga. I'm done with on this, but this shows going across the field. It shows the yield difference that the treatment may have caused, and then you can really see how it relates to topography. We overlaid this on LIDAR 1 meter 1 meter imagery. So what we have, I circled those areas where we had a good mixture at Volga, just a few little patches, if you remember. And really, no effect on yield. So, with that mixture. So, but you go to Bristol, and that's kind of an eye opener right there. So, that low spot. Remember where the cover crops grew really well. What do we have? Over 1,500 kilograms per hectare down there on average. That red there, that's 9 bushel yield loss. So, for those of you speaking bushels. So. That really kind of appeared to get a little bit weedy on us there at Bristol in the low spot. But overall, there was no significant effect on yield, though, for the whole strip averages. So in summary, the lower elevations produced more cover crop biomass, especially those where the drainage was not so well, where there was no tile. So another thing that, although production was generally low for crimson clover, it tend to perform better at higher elevations, and that was consistent at both locations. We really didn't see any consistent trends in seeding methods between locations, and we also saw a potential negative effect on soybean yields in lower landscape positions. I'd like to thank the South Dakota Soybean Research and Promotion Council for funding, and also our on-farm cooperators, John Rapp near Bristol, and he let us use his tractor as well, John Kleinjohn near Volga. That concludes my talk. I'd be happy to take any questions.
We have time for a few questions.
Yes. Yeah, the question was, you broadcasted and drilled at R3. One of the sites was R2, the Volga site. The other one was R3, so it's close.
How come you didn't try earlier? I guess.
Well, this year we did, so stay tuned. We tried this year about V5 or V6 on July 2nd. So they weren't field length strips, so the farmer didn't really want to take that risk. And I don't blame him that early. So, but I can tell you right now, I think we went too early, and the shade just took everything. So I'll say that much. So, next, any others?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yes.
So I really like that you're trying to capture this landscape features and how that's driving cover crop performance. I'm wondering what other metrics that you've been considering. I mean, is it all biomass that you've been focusing on? What other metrics do you have that you might be coming out with?
Okay, the question is, what other metrics do we have that we've been coming out with as opposed to just biomass? And yes, we did take some soil samples last year. I just haven't finished analyzing that. You know, we can look at moisture and nitrogen components. So, and I also, we want to look at shading effects just by underneath, maybe doing some shading studies under artificial shade cloth to screen for multiple species that could potentially work. It gets hard to do all that in the field. That's, you know, you take up a lot of space. You know, about two treatments is all you can squeeze in a field doing these types of studies. Does that answer your question? Okay, all right. Anything else? Yes.
Oh. We have no more time for questions.
Well, thank you.